This is Your Brain on Risk. This is Mind Over Money, the podcast where Kevin Cook exposes the psychology of investing.
Welcome back to Mind Over Money. I'm Kevin Cook, your field guide and storyteller for the fascinating arena of behavioral economics. When I was a currency trader in a former life, I struggled to understand how to catch the really big moves in the Japanese yen, the Australian dollar, and the new euro currency that had just launched. Even if you were using lots of fundamental analysis in combination with technical charting tools, jumping on too many false breakouts that confirmed the bottom in the euro at 80 cents, for example, was a recipe for ruin. And this was before I started really diving into the mass psychology of markets with the help of Benoit Mandelbrot's ideas about wild randomness and Nassim Taleb's concept of the black swan. 20 years ago, I was still just focused on individual psychology, that your own mind was the obstacle you had to overcome to trade well. So I relegated the big moves in currencies, commodities, gold, and stocks to what I called centrifugal force. The price of an asset would coil and twist for years sometimes before it suddenly snapped like a spring, loaded with pent-up energy. And markets could remain inefficient for a very long time, as we know, until they quickly jump to a new equilibrium level. In short, I stopped trying to predict when a breakout was going to occur and simply jumped on board the move once it was finally in full motion. Well, imagine being a bond trader and an inflation hawk in the past few years, waiting for that day when the Federal Reserve monetary policies would finally ignite inflation and bondholders would rush for the exits. That's been a losing trade for a decade. And listen, I've been following this kind of logic for a long time, back to when everyone was worried the Chinese would sell all their U.S. treasuries and move into the euro. The wails of panic about the U.S. dollar losing global reserve currency status and essentially imploding were deafening. But it didn't happen, because the U.S.-China trade deficit that fed their treasury appetite was a big long-term trend, driven in part by a fixed currency peg for the Chinese yuan. Besides, for the U.S. dollar to implode, the euro currency would have to soar. We saw some of that in 2008 as the dollar fell in relation to both oil and the euro. I think oil got above 120 bucks a barrel, and the euro certainly went to 160. But over the long run, for the number one and number two economies in the world, it simply just goes back and forth. As I learned long ago in FX, it's all relative. The other thing I learned is that your currency's direction is determined by the direction of your interest rates. Rising rate currencies get bought and falling rate currencies get sold. In fact, it's a type of borrowing of the cheap currency to buy the more expensive one, relatively speaking. The funding currency creates a carry trade for borrowing and buying all kinds of assets, from gold to stocks. And because of the Fed's decade-long commitment to keeping interest rates low, the U.S. dollar has been a terrific way to borrow and buy every asset imaginable, including Bitcoin. Plus, quantitative easing bond buying got a big shot in the arm last year when the Fed decided to buy corporate bonds to support the economy and really, in essence, the stock market. Last summer, I did a vlog titled Inflation Coming: 12 Charts You Must See to Believe. And one of them was a view of the value of the U.S. stock market versus GDP at 177%. Yep, the market cap of the Wilshire 5000 was $34 trillion versus GDP slipping under $20 trillion. And since then, the Wilshire 5000 went to $42 trillion this year. So that's, you know, over 200% to GDP. Meanwhile, the coronavirus pandemic ignited massive federal stimulus payments to offset the surge in unemployment and shut down businesses like restaurants. So I'm exploring the possibility that we could be headed into a perfect storm for inflation and maybe for risk assets, because the Federal Reserve is super transparent about their commitment to defeat deflation and stoke inflation. They're going to let it get hot. They've already said this. They're going to let inflation run hot and maybe focus on a longer term average. Like if we've been at 1.5% forever, hey, we can let it go to 3%. And that's, you know, That's an average, a little over 2% where they want to be. So, I mean, the Fed has a dual mandate, but they're also in a dual conundrum. We've got high unemployment still, plus we're starting to get some inflation, and they're trapped because they want to get back to full employment. All right, to help me break all this down, I brought in a professional trader who is also a commodity expert here at Zacks, Jeremy Mullen. He runs the Commodity Innovators Portfolio. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, I mentioned Bitcoin, and I heard that you basically top-ticked Bitcoin with a big sale above 55,000. Tell us about that trade.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's kind of luck. But, you know, I got in, I noticed back in March during the pandemic that liquidation. I started watching Bitcoin because I've always been in and out of that thing. But never was a hodler like a lot of these other people, just more for trading. And the more I dove into the ecosystem behind Bitcoin, the more I started to gain even more interest this past year. And it came around decentralized finance. I just started to believe that Bitcoin could become a real need as a reserve asset in this crypto world that's growing. So when it started to break out over 10,000, I started to build a little bit. And when MicroStrategy got in and MassMutual and PayPal, I just took that as a huge signal that this would be widely adopted. And, it doubled pretty quickly from there. It went from 10 to 20, held that, went to 30, and then I had some technical targets, so I sold some of it there. And then I'm just like, I'm just going to hold this. And I got this uneasy, being a trader for 15 years, anybody who's traded up for any length of time, you get this uneasy feeling sometimes, and you just have a market feel. This past weekend, I was looking for 63,000 was like a technical target. And I was just like, you know what? Why am I waiting for an extra 5,000 here? I've held this for almost 50,000 points here. I'm just going to get out. And I hit the bid at 57,650 in my Coinbase account. And I got lucky because it fell all the way down to the $45,000 level. And now I'm kind of hoping it comes a little lower so I can get back in. But yeah, that was a nice one.
Yeah. And I want to just comment on that trader feel, that sort of that, that sixth sense you had. It's like most new investors and traders, they're constantly acting on their emotions. Those aren't the right feels to act on. But after you've been in the game a while, your brain collectively starts to produce a sort of second order intelligence where you kind of sense things, you see patterns or relationships, and you get that feeling like, I think I got to sell or buy this.
Yeah, for sure. And there was just kind of other signals that I had, I kind of felt myself getting married to this. Like I was just in love with my Bitcoin, and I see other people, in the Twitter and Michael Saylor and some of these other people, they're just married to this idea. And the euphoria was a little bit too much for me. And I actually texted some of the better traders I know out there and just some people I know, about 10 people. And they all came back to me with the same answer. Like, I would just hold it. Like, do you really need that money right now? Yeah. I would just hold it. And I was like, okay, everybody told me to hold it. I'm selling.
That's my tell, right? Yeah, there's a little bit of religious fanaticism around the BTC. So listen, when I originally had this idea to have you on the podcast earlier this week, I was talking about the rise in the 10-year treasury yield. And I looked at it and I'm like, wow, this has gone from, 90 basis points to 135 basis points really quick. And that's on a percentage basis, that's a big move for the yield in the bonds like that. And it just jumped again today. Tell us what happened today.
Yeah, so I've been looking at this 10-year note. Now, I'm not a big interest rate watcher, but sometimes when it's acting like this, you're forced to watch it because markets are following it and you have to just know what it's doing. So I noticed every morning this morning, the markets were selling off as rates ticked higher. I'm like, wow, this might be a new catalyst we got here. But then Powell got on the mic and said, no, we're good. We're not going to raise any rates. And the market rallied. And we had this crazy rally over the last 2 days from the SPX 50-day test, and it was like, wow, that's it? Like, that was the flush? But then again this morning, rates started ticking higher, and there was no Powell to calm the market. Right. And we just had this crazy wick in the 10-year Treasury note. Call it a massive stop run or what you will, but it wicked down, which caused rates to go up to over 1.5. So we have that means that we have eclipsed the SPX dividend yield, which is around 1.48% last check.
Right,
so
right.
What happens there is you take away that yield advantage in the SPX, and all of a sudden it's not as advantageous to go to stocks when these yields are ticking higher. So this is a catalyst that I don't think was there even a week ago, and all of a sudden we have to worry about it. So it's going to be interesting to watch and see if this calms or this gains momentum.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 10-year Treasury note yield chart, which is TNX, and it shows that that spike, that tail that you saw to the downside in the bonds, on the upside to 1.6% it got up to, and it's holding 1.5% right now.
TLT might be the one that everybody's familiar with. That had a flush down as well, so you can check out that chart. But yeah, it's a pretty insane move considering how far we have fallen. It's kind of a capitulation move, so we'll see if things back off from here and normalize. I don't know. It's just an interesting move, and I think it will be something we'll have to talk about in the coming months.
Yeah. You know, on the order of my, you know, centrifugal force idea that things can coil for a very long time and then all of a sudden explode. I mean, maybe we're at that inflection point where we got so complacent with long rates, you know, being under 1% and the Fed's buying all kinds of bonds, and the Fed committed. The Fed said, yeah, we're not going to raise rates for 2 or 3 years. And then all of a sudden the market's sort of making a decision about what's happening with growth and long rates. And this is sort of a growth forecast. So the good news is that the U.S. economy is going to regain steam here quickly. And that's why the bonds are pricing this in. So what are you seeing when you run a portfolio where you trade commodities and ETFs? What areas have you seen this show up in already, even before the 10-year was making its move? Where were you seeing the inflation?
Well, it's almost everywhere except nat gas.
Okay.
And I've tried long nat gas and it just doesn't work. But more like the best moves have come in the energy field outside of nat gas. So a lot of the oil names, we've owned XLE a couple times. We got in and out of that and had some nice trades. It's basically was an underowned space. And all of a sudden, with inflation, with supply that was cut off, meeting demand that's going to come rushing back, I think those markets are pricing in that kind of dynamic of, whoa, supply isn't what it should be for this demand that's coming after the pandemic's over. So you have that, and you have this big inflation narrative behind that. It's causing this just vacuum up, and that's what we're seeing in oil and some of the other commodities. Now the metals are very interesting. Gold is really confusing because you would think that would be going up with this whole stimulus story. But, you know, that's the Bitcoin question. Is it taking a lot of love away from gold? But we're seeing a lot in the grain markets. The meats are starting to tick up. But the grains have been one of the hottest markets. I think all the farmers are starting to drive Lamborghinis in there through their fields because they're seeing some nice prices. And it doesn't seem we saw a downtick today because I saw China or the export sales. China bought less than expected. And honestly, I can't remember last time those export sales moved the market like they did today. But still the long-term trend is intact, and those farmers are pretty happy.
So let's talk about the stock market again, because you know there's been this logic that, you know, as long as the Fed is committed to staying easy on rates, you know, and money can just pour into stocks. You mentioned that gap between the dividend yield and the S&P and where long-term rates are as being favorable. I remember the last time I told people that, oh, rates are really low. Don't worry about it. you know, the Fed is going to stay steady and slow was the autumn of 2018. And then we had a big market correction because, you know, investors were so worried about rising rates. Do you think we're headed for something like that now?
Yeah, I think it's also like the short term thing. And, you know, the Fed just kind of massages this, but it's always going to be a worry because I think there's going to be a question about there's always this nerve about will central banks lose control? And I think when you see a move like today, it's like, whoa, like what was that? And after that short term panic, it gets kind of like capitulates, then things start to normalize and people become less worried about a move like that. And it's just kind of slowly gets ingrained in the market because it's kind of a surprise. We didn't expect rates to trickle up this fast, but I think we got that data last week with retail sales, CPI, and some of the better economic data that's kind of rushing that whole idea of we might be coming back faster than expected. So what's the Fed going to do?
Right. I mean, the Fed, that's why I say I think they're trapped because their commitment to employment is more important right now, I think, than their commitment to keeping inflation low. In fact, they've already said they're going to let it run hot. And instead of worrying about, you know, if inflation gets to 2.5% or 3%, they're just going to say, well, we're looking at the long-term average. So since inflation was 1% for so long, we'll just average it out that we're still at 2%. You know, and I think a lot of people, you might have like a Peter Schiff out there who would say, oh, I've seen this coming for years. And then, you know, because of all the stimulation, right? All the stimulus from the Fed. But then the pandemic, you know, I mean, the Fed's balance sheet went from, let's say, $4 trillion up to $7 trillion really quick as they start buying bonds. And then the deficit just exploded, right? And now we're talking about doing another $1.9 trillion. I mean, I sort of jokingly call it the black swan of PUA. And PUA, of course, is Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. And, you know, all of this stimulus, even if the Fed says we're not raising rates for 3 years, will the market sort of take over and inflation and long rates will run higher?
Well, that's kind of the unknown. And I think that's why there's a worry with this. I'll just say this. I don't have the answer to that because this is simply an unprecedented time with an unprecedented amount of money being thrown.
For sure.
You know, everywhere. I mean, it's everywhere. It's falling out of the trees. And I think that we just don't know. So people wonder why the VIX is so high with the market up here. Well, that's why. We're just in unprecedented times. We don't know what's going to happen in this situation. And all I can say is just be careful. Yeah, you know, enjoy this bull run, buy stocks, but I always say, don't forget to remain disciplined. Don't get over leveraged like some of these YOLO yahoos. You just gotta be careful in this situation. And I think that's what a high VIX is telling you, which spiked to 28 over 28 today. So I'd like to make one point though. Bullard was out today saying yields, higher yields is probably a good sign. So they're like okay with this seemingly. I think that's one other thing that might have spooked the market. And I think it was yesterday, Powell said he expects inflation to be volatile over the next year or so. So there we go. We might have some up and downs with that, with the inflation volatility as well. So
yeah,
it's an unknown. It's a big
unknown. The characters I'm worried about are the big asset managers, you know, the people that we don't see, you know, managing tens and hundreds of billions and having to weigh all this kind of stuff. You know, do I, you know, where am I getting yield from? Am I getting it from stocks or bonds? And what shifts will they make as they see the yield curve shifting? Will they all of a sudden decide, you know what, it's time to scale down our equities, especially since a lot of stuff is overvalued.
I think you're right on that. That's what I would assume they would do.
Yeah. You know, we get a big correction. I think it'll be a buying opportunity. I don't think the bull market's over, but as you said, this is unprecedented. Like we use that word unprecedented for the 2008, 2009 financial crisis. And then what the Fed was doing with QE and bond buying. And now we're in this completely new dynamic. you know, where there's all this money flooding into risk assets from, you know, from the Federal Reserve and then from Congress. So yeah, it's showing up everywhere. What, you know, the thing I worry about is like, if it kills risk appetite, if the bond market just does its thing and all of a sudden the 10 years at 2%, you know, then I think that really hurts the stock market. All right. So back to, since you're a trader, I got to ask you, we just saw another explosion in the short covering craze last night with GameStop. Did you follow that at all?
Yeah, I did. You know, I think we had a meeting last week and I said that this was over and I was actually, I was trading it and I was long the, as soon as it started to break out, 55 area, but I was done pretty much on the long side at 60, 65. I thought, oh, let's just start shorting it. So I started kind of playing around a little too deep and it was very volatile. So I was able to manage okay as it went up. But then I got stuck with pretty big size on the around when it halted at 92. I was short from 90 or 87. Oh, boy. And that was scary. It was into the close and it spiked to 98 and my life flashed before my eyes. It came straight down to like 85 and I got out quickly. I just got saved basically.
Wow.
And I started looking because it was at the close. I trade a lot of earnings after hours. I started looking at like NVIDIA and some other stuff. And then I come back to it and it's at 110. So I'm like, oh boy, this is back on because somebody like me who did not cover down in the 80s is in trouble here.
Yeah.
So I started trading after hours for 2 hours and it worked out very, very well. I was on both the long and the upside. So for me, it's just a crazy trading vehicle. I'm not trying to like take a position on it. I'm just going with the order flow. You know, for others who are YOLO'd into these calls again, great for them. And for the whoever went short on this again, I mean, fool me once. Come on. What are you doing?
Yeah.
So I don't know where this goes, but there's rumors about them buying some esports company today. There is all kinds of stuff going on. So who knows where this goes. I just would not want to be a position trading this thing because it is insane.
Yeah. Boy, yeah, stay away from that. I got a millennial son who's gotten a little bit into trading and I said, don't do anything with GameStop, you know, because you're not going to be able to get in or out as fast as you think you can.
Yeah. I mean, you're competing against a guy like me who can get out fast. And
right.
Also, I'd like to add, like, the halts are insane. It probably halted 6-7 times this morning. I'm not sure. But, you know, you can get stuck on the wrong side of that and then you lose 10-20 points real quick when it reopens. So it's dangerous. I would just at least say if you're not an experienced trader, you should not be trading GameStop.
You know, one thing that I don't know enough about historically is how deficits impact interest rates. And, you know, the logic is that, you know, once a country is, you know, exploding their deficit, you know, it's going to be bad for risk. You know, rates are going to go much higher and stock markets go down. So that's an area to look at. But I want to go back to commodities. And I don't know if you mentioned lumber, but that's we've sort of got this housing boom in the middle of the pandemic as people just started fixing up and moving and whatever. Looks like the price of lumber had a huge move too, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I do have some returns here and that. As of February 17th, it was up 38%. It was the number one performer. And yeah, you said it. There's just a huge demand, not enough supply. I actually, the guy who built my deck, he recently did my my bathroom, and I was asking him, you know, how lumber prices, how deck, because he does a lot of decks, and he was just like, oh, it's so expensive now, like compared to where you got it, which was a couple summers ago. He's like, your cost probably would have been, you know, 5-10 grand more. I'm like, oh my God.
That's wow.
Insane. So, we have a big deck, but, yeah, it's pretty insane the way, and I don't think that stops there because the demand for housing and there's just low inventory. So we need to build more inventory, and that lumber is going to have to keep coming. So behind that, I got gasoline at 34%, WTI at 26%, heating oil at 23%, platinum 16%, cotton 15%.
And those returns are over what time period?
That's 2021 up into February 17th.
Oh, my God. Those are just year-to-date.
That's just year-to-date stuff. Yeah, right.
Wow.
You got copper up, I think, over 10% now because it just moved. That's probably up 15%. Yeah. I have February 17th.
So it's not unrealistic to say that the commodities moved first and then the long bond started to get sold, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the tail is here, but you got these kind of returns. You're kind of like, oh, this is what you need to be watching. And a lot of the underlying stocks have performed with that, these commodities too. You can see all the energy stocks, some of the fertilizers for the grains are moving real nice. It's really been a nice, but it's hard to catch. Like I was in the miners earlier, probably about, I don't know, 4-5 months ago. And so for like FCX and CLF and stuff like that, and the steel and copper prices really pulled those up significantly. And, I sold them way too early. I wouldn't imagine they'd go up another 100%, which is what FCX did. It's been just amazing with some of those stocks that follow these commodities.
Well, and that's another dynamic here tied back into the stock market and all these asset shifts is that, what stocks led us out of the pandemic? Well, it was what I call the softosphere, right? Software stocks. And now those, have incredible valuations, and value was ignored. Energy was ignored, as you said. And now those sort of cyclical areas are attractive again, as prices rise and the economy looks to do better. So I did a thing with Tracy Reinick, our colleague, last fall about like a long-term housing boom driven by millennials who are, in their peak earning and family formation years. And, that could go on, like it's going to have ups and downs, but that could be like a, 3 to 8 year trend right now that we're in the sweet spot of. So those
roaring
lumber 20s, prices,
right?
That's what's that?
Roaring 20s. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you mentioned some of the performers. Don't forget the financials, too. I mean, they are at XLF is at, I think, all time highs. And with the rates higher, those banks do a little better. So
it's, finally, the yield curve is working a little bit in their favor so they can actually make money on loans. Yeah.
So those the energy and financials, what everybody hated last year, are pretty much the two best this year.
Right. So that's why, I had talk about that feeling that you get when you're a trader or an investor and then you don't follow it. That's one of the worst feelings. In the past week, I watched some of my favorite software stocks go to new all-time highs, like Shopify, Square, Baidu, Nvidia, software and hardware. And I thought, I should probably take some of these gains because it just seems like, how much farther can we go? And then, and that stuff's getting clobbered. Where do you see the NASDAQ going from here?
You're not going to like my answer. people call me a bear. I'm not a bear. I just use technical levels and I play both sides. So, unfortunately, the NASDAQ looks horrible. So I look at the NQ futures, right? That's the chart I look at. And right now this is a fib level. So from the January lows to the all time highs, I had a 61.8% retracement that should have been support. So that's at 30, was about 3,100. And that's exactly where the 50-day moving average was, right? So we actually, the last 2 days, came back above that. So I was like, okay, maybe this was a shakeout. It still doesn't feel right. And I kind of spelled that out in the commentary. Like Amazon still finished red yesterday, even though the S&P rallied big.
So wait, can I just ask you, when you said 3,100, you were talking about the S&P, right?
Sorry, 13,100 is what I meant.
Gotcha. Okay, now we're back on NASDAQ. Okay. Yeah.
So, God, the levels are so big now, you mix them up. So, 13,127 is what I have for the 50-day. So we crawled back above that, but today we flushed. And we are very close to the lows put in on was earlier this week. And I think those get taken out. And what I use is when a Fib breaks, I use the 161.8 extension. And that's at 12,000. So I think we have, 900 points down to go, which isn't a massive move. And on top of that, 11,560 is the NASDAQ's 200-day moving average. So that would make sense with a big flush to go test that 12,000 down to the 200-day. Now, what's interesting is with the SPX seemingly so strong, I don't know how the NASDAQ gets there. Like, what's the catalyst? And maybe the catalyst is these higher rates. So I don't know how we get there, but that's what I have in my charts. And I don't mean to sound bearish because I long-term, I am bullish on everything, but that's just what my charts are speaking to me.
Yeah. And you know what? That's not bad news to me at all, because I told you that, I was doing a little research on and looking at like the Wilshire 5000. And when I saw, oh my God, this thing's up to 42 trillion. I actually, before we started the podcast, I went and sold a bunch of stocks just because I'm like, if I needed any confirmation of what large asset managers are looking at and in, where is the froth? Where do we take cash from? They can take cash from the stock market.
Yeah.
And to your point about the S&P sort of not confirming what the NASDAQ is leading, I've had that experience before too. And in fact, I remember one time last year that I sort of ignored what the NASDAQ was leading because, the S&P hasn't confirmed it yet, but the S&P finally followed. So I like what you're looking at here in the short term.
Sorry, I'll make three more points on that. Okay, so the pandemic obviously fueled the NASDAQ higher. So if the pandemic's ending, we kind of have to take some of that priced in out, right? Like we have to take that off. So that makes sense. So that's what's been happening. We've seen the money flow into cruise lines this week. What the heck? So the market's really pricing in the end of this pandemic. It's pretty plain and simple. The second point is the SPAC market. The SPAC market is the hottest part of the equities. And we saw CCIV, Churchill Capital, who's merging with Lucid. We saw that thing get cut in half. So that took a lot of the juice out of the SPACs. And I think that could be the first bubble in the whole NASDAQ 2 burst to cause calling for a crash, but just a little flush here to take some of that hot money out of the system. And the third point is Bitcoin. All these things go together, right? So if we do see that flush in the NASDAQ, that's going to the same kind of people that hold tech stocks hold Bitcoin. And we might see some panic selling in that as well that could bring it down to viable levels. I think the 50-day, I don't have my chart, but I think the 50-day in the Bitcoin futures is around 35 or 36,000. Man, I would love to see that. I would love to buy mine back there. So we'll see if that plays out or it's just 2021 and we go straight up. I really don't know.
Well, Jeremy, you made a great point about how it's all tied in. And, because, dollars are the funding for all of this and they just move around. But since there's so many of them, there hasn't been much rotation. It's been all one way. It's been all risk on all the time. And so eventually you would think a perfect storm could happen to reverse that. And it'll probably be the nastiest, after all the shorts who tried to be short all these assets for so long and just gotten destroyed, and then it can reverse.
And I think leverage is a key word here too. I still think the market is too leveraged and that has to be taken out before we can kind of have a place where I get comfortable. That's in the crypto sphere too. It's very leveraged and the SPACs are very leveraged and I would love to see all that. I mean, people will lose money and that stinks, but I think the market structure, like looking at it from a market structure standpoint, that leverage gets taken out. That's when my eyes open up and I see some buying opportunities.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because it's not just super cheap and super abundant dollars. It's when people, you know, turn up the heat on it by turning that into leverage. And yeah, that's an excess in the market that does need to get washed out occasionally. So we'll probably be seeing some of that. I'm sure I'm going to get some emails from all the millennials. I said, hey, stay away from GameStop. You're not going to defeat Wall Street. And then they're going to be like, but look it, it's back to 150.
Yeah, I think 170 when I last. So yeah, it's going. I would encourage people to just take caution and always just discipline is so important in this game. And just use stops. That's all I can say.
Yeah. And maybe, as this inflation picture sorts out, we get back to a more normal stock market, you know, not just a one way NASDAQ train higher, but money rotating from, you know, in and out of different sectors and people paying more attention to like regular economic stats instead of the weird ones we've been dealing with, you know, super high unemployment. And no growth, and yet the stock market ripping higher, that can't last forever.
Yeah, that's what I would love to happen. I think a lot of people would like to see that because a lot of the price action simply doesn't make sense for a lot of us who've been here. And all you can do at this point is follow the tape. You can't really fight, you know, what should be normal. You know, it's just like a headline comes up, it should be positive and it's negative and vice versa. So, that's been a thing that's been happening for, for over 5 years. So by now we're all used to it, but it would be nice to get some consolidation. And then maybe towards the end of the year, when the economy is really ripping, we can see new highs. That's if I had to guess, that's what I would guess would play out.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, thanks for coming on the show. It's good for people of all ages to hear from a professional trader with your experience. What I've been telling my millennial son is, no matter what positions you hold, you have to be prepared to wake up one morning and see everything red. And then you have to have your mind prepared. How will you feel on that day? You know, whether you're as an investor or a trader. And so, there could be some wake-up calls coming and some margin calls, as you said. If we get some sort of bigger move, like if, you know, rates keep going higher and stocks keep going lower, that'll wash out a lot of people. The good news on the other side of that, as I also tell my millennial son and his wife who are just getting into investing, is that will be the time to buy, because some of the best returns for investors are to buy those panics like the Corona crash last March. So we're seeing some of those profits get taken. But there will be other opportunities as markets swing back and forth emotionally. Any final thoughts, Jeremy, on the market or inflation?
No, I think we said a lot, didn't we? I think we laid out the game plan would be to just wait for these technical levels to trade, that leverage needs to be unwound. And I think at some point this year, we're going to have a flush and then you can start buying again. But here I feel uneasy up here. I do.
Yeah. Well, that's the way I felt when I started looking at the numbers more. So and just to clarify, your level in the NASDAQ, I see the NASDAQ 100, slipping below 13,000 here. Looks like it's on its way to test Tuesday's low, which was 12,750, let's say.
Right.
And if we break that, where could we go?
12,000 would be my targets. And then I would look like, you know, the NASDAQ gets a little slippery, right? So it can always go through targets. And it would, if it got down to 11,500 to 600, that's a 200 day. I think that's when you step in.
Yeah.
And we could probably at the very least bounce there. At the very least see maybe some consolidation or some volatility, maybe test it a couple times. And then resume the bigger trend. So that's what I would look for: 11,500 to 12,000 on the NASDAQ. And I think you have to be a buyer at those levels.
Right. And for investors, we're not saying short this market right now, but you could take some profits and be ready to buy a bigger dip. All right, Jeremy, thanks for joining me on Mind Over Money.
Thank you.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.